Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Grace Hour Show, our Christian program that takes a dive into our daily challenges, helps us to learn our faith in a practical way.
Hopefully.
My name is Pastor Matt Garrett. I'm joined with Philippe Siragi. I never thought I would be here again with this man, but here I am.
Yes, unfortunately.
And he's wearing a flowery shirt to boot.
It's a cool shirt.
I can't tell. It might be blue. It's
blue and green.
Blue and
green? The leaves are green.
Okay.
Wonderful. You're jealous because you have a plain shirt. That's
why. But it's green.
I know, but it's not.
But it's not
doesn't blue. Have flowers.
And it's not confusing to anyone else's eyeballs. It's just one color.
Yeah, but I like it.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today, we are continuing the week-long theme on apologetics.
Mm-hmm.
And Philippe is what I would call a master of apologetics.
I don't know about that.
He teaches apologetics at Maryland Bible College and Seminary. Both intro and advanced apologetics. He has done many years of work, academics, and research in the field. And whenever I have questions I do not know the answers to, I typically come to this man right across the table from me.
And I Google it.
So I'm looking forward. to whatever Google has to say through him. And also what he has to say.
Because I don't know what I'm talking about.
Do any of us ever really know what we're talking about?
Yeah, mostly we don't.
We're going to pretend that Philippe knows what he's talking about today.
Yeah.
No, but seriously, he does. And I'm looking forward to it. So Philippe, without me crowding this any more than I need to, please take it away.
Just bail out.
What's our premise today?
All right. So the premise today is when we understand apologetics, we mostly understand it as a defense to the faith. But there's more to it. There's also the offensive side of apologetics, which not mean offending, but offensive, like in, you know, a good defense is always offensive when it's in sport. It's the same thing in apologetics, because many times, especially in the 21st century, where people say a couple things like, this is the 21st century, you know, we have science, we don't need God to explain the world, or I'm smarter than you because I don't believe some guy up there in the clouds with a beard, you know, that sounds ridiculous, like a unicorn. So there is this sense of the higher ground because I'm an intellectual, because I believe in nothing, right? Mm-hmm. So, and that's a different conversation than the usual conversation in apologetic, which is, well, I have a question for you. If God is so good, why there's so much evil in the world? Then I have to defend, per se, by giving a defense, a reason for the hope that is in me, as we see in 1 Peter 3:15.
Yep.
But then the other approach is, hold on, I do have answers for your questions, but I do have questions of my own.
Right.
If God does not exist, there are consequences also, because we can't explain the universe the way it is today, besides hope and chance.
Mm-hmm.
Do hope and chance pass the scrutiny of the intellectual work of looking at asking the hard questions?
Hmm.
So the Christian who does apologetics is not the only one that is apologizing in the corner. Sorry to be a Christian. I'll try to answer the questions as best as I can. I hope I'll do a good job. Sorry. It's not that at all. It's like we go in the offense by saying, hold on for a second. You say that there is no God. Where does this universe come from?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't know. Okay, but we do have an explanation, but the explanation doesn't make any sense. It does if you think about it, right? So then you have, like yesterday, we heard Pastor Schaller and Pastor Love explain the arguments for the existence of God. The cosmological argument, the teleological argument, then you have others like the axiological arguments. There's seven of them out there that are help to make a case for God's existence. On the other hand, once you've done that, you can also say, okay, I made my case, let me ask you some questions, because you believe in nothing in one way, and that cannot just be the answer for everything, right? So what we'll be doing today is looking at some of the arguments we can bring to our friends that are unbelieving and thinking that they don't need God to explain the world by saying, you actually do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least if you don't want to call it God, you have to have an explanation to account for the reality of what we're experiencing as human beings.
Yeah,
because there's more than matter and energy.
Right. Just observed reality. Yeah.
Yes. So that's what we're going to be talking about today.
Okay. Very interesting.
Okay.
Hey, if you're following along and you have questions, please feel free to write in. Let us know. We are live on YouTube and Facebook. You can enter in the chat on either one of those platforms. I think you got to sign in first, but then you just enter in the chat and you can ask whatever questions you like. So please feel free. Comments or questions are welcome. Philippe, where would you start with the atheist point of view on how they believe in our existence today?
Well, I would say the first, okay, so let's define terms a little bit. So theism is a belief that there is a God, you know, or a multiple God, because you can be a monotheist or a polytheist. Like, you know,
pantheist, dualist.
Yeah. Also, a pantheist believes that God is in everything. Yeah. A polytheist believes that there is one main God, but plenty others, mm-hmm. like the Greeks and the some religions in Asia. Mm-hmm. And there is the monotheist, like us, the Muslims, and, you know, and the Jews.
Yep.
And then there's the atheists who believe there's no God at all. Mm-hmm. And it's not just people who believe there's nothing. It's also people who believe there is no God. Like the Buddhist, technically, could be considered atheist because they believe in the prophet somehow that speaks about a higher reality where there's no being. It's mm-hmm. just like the nirvana is the big nothingness out there.
That like an essence.
Yes. Yeah. So, but it's not a person. Right. So, and if you believe, and that's what we're talking about today, we're looking at our unbelieving friends who believe in nothing. We're challenging them, but number one is if you believe that there is nothing and they only believe in what we call materialism.
Yeah.
Materialism is the belief that there's nothing beyond matter and energy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what we're saying, one of the arguments we can bring to challenge the unbelieving friends is that materialism does not account for the totality of human experience.
Yes.
Right? Our existential yearnings and questions cannot be answered by just saying, well, there's nothing out there.
Right.
Because if there was nothing out there, then what would evolution equip us with questions for which there is no answers,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think you and I were talking earlier about, I'm going to paraphrase because I don't remember the exact quote, but the point that C.S. Lewis is making, if there is a stomach, it's because there's food to be digested.
Yeah.
So if there's a yearning, it's because there must be an answer somewhere,
right?
Otherwise, you're left with two options, right, mm-hmm. to understand this. Number one is evolution is just messing up and messing up and messing up and equipping us with things we don't need,
mm-hmm.
which is the opposite of what evolution is supposed to be,
right?
Adapting, adapting, adapting.
Mm-hmm.
Or there is more to life than just matter and energy, and which begs the question, what is it?
Hmm.
And I have a couple of quotes by one of my favorite authors, J.K. Chesterton. You have them in front of you as well.
Yes, I do.
So I'm going to read. Can you read the first one? Because I think,
the one that you have one on your paper.
No, the one on your paper.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I think your French accent is better than mine.
Okay, but yeah. Okay, sure. No problem. I can't even try the French part. All right. Here we go.
No, please.
I won't offend anyone.
I will feel very offended.
All right.
I'm easily offended. You know me.
This is from G.K. Chesterton, like we said, and they're singing happy birthday outside, which is great. That's just
wonderful. I don't know whose birthday it is, but it's not mine.
As an explanation of the world, materialism has a sort of insane simplicity. It has just the quality of the madman's argument. We have at once the sense of it covering everything and the sense of it leaving everything out. Contemplate some able and sincere materialist, as, for instance, Mr. McCabe, and you will have exactly this unique sensation. He understands everything, and everything does not seem worth understanding. It is not thinking of the real things of the earth, of fighting peoples or proud mothers, or first love or fear upon the sea.
Yeah, so the point here is, so I recommend Chesterton as, he's one of my favorite authors, and just to put him in context, is late 19th, early 20th century. I think he died in 1936. Mm-hmm. I think it's not on my paper, I think it's 1936. And C.S. Lewis got converted by his influence in his life as being one of the philosophers he respected. So he was not a philosopher per se. He was a writer and a journalist.
Right.
But he was highly intelligent and he was a Catholic apologist mm-hmm. by default.
Mm-hmm.
And what he's saying here is very simple. He's saying, okay, well, now if there is nothing out there but matter and energy, then it's simple. Right.
Yeah.
There's no complex ideas.
Yeah.
But this simplicity is the argument of a madman.
Right.
Because the point, what he's made, is, that's what he says here, sort of the insane simplicity.
Yes.
It is insane because it covers everything
and
he's leaving everything out. Meaning like, well, you don't need to explain the world because the world is simple, right? That's what it is.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, your explanation does not account for anything. Just like saying, well, you know, you see something and say, well, it's just, you know, like whatever we are experiencing, you look at the around us and I give you like a simplest explanation. Just live with it. Just mm-hmm. ignore it. It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't.
Right.
My senses tell me I shouldn't. Right. So it's the same point he's making here. Like there's this insane simplicity that it covers everything. Yeah. There's nothing out there but matter and energy, but it leaves everything out at the same time. What about all these things at the end? The free upon the sea, the proud mothers. So, and he says a little more. Mr. McCabe was one of his friends because at the time was interesting. until, I want to say, the 1980s and 1990s, opposing factions could sit down together. They were good friends. They would end up in a pub, drinking together and having a fun.
Yeah.
And they write books against each other, but about their ideas, not about their personalities.
Mm-hmm.
So he says they have a unique sensation when you read, you know, Mr. McCabe. He understands everything. Like he can tell you there's nothing out there but matter and energy.
Mm-hmm.
But then everything does not seem worth understanding.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on for a second. You're leaving so many things out that you don't account for my experience as human beings.
Right.
What about my longings?
Right.
Well, shut up about that. So that's the point. So actually, when you're an atheist, you are leaving everything out,
sure.
just like Mr. McCabe would, you know. And then he says, what kind of things? Well, he says, well, you know, the real things of the earth, the fighting peoples and proud mothers, first loves upon the sea. And then he goes to the second quote you have in the paper. It's basically later on he's going to say the main deductions of the materialist. So if you look at what they think and what you can deduce from it, gradually destroy his humanity. Mm-hmm. Like you're less of a human being mm-hmm. if you're a humanist.
Right.
That's the funniest part, right? If you're materialist. And he says, I do not only mean kindness, but I mean hope, courage, poetry, initiatives, all that is human.
Yeah.
Why do we have this yearning for beauty? Why do we have museums? Why are we interested in art?
Right.
All these things are not valuable for our survival. They're completely useless.
Yeah.
So by you know,
how does it benefit a man to walk through an entire building full of paintings or sculptures or whatever the case may be? How does that benefit humankind? How is that necessary for us to thrive?
Well, that's a good question because it does not help us survive.
No.
According to the evolutionary theory, but it does answer the question of man's interest for more than surviving, which raises the other questions. Why?
Right.
And if you think, well, shut up about this, let's just say, you know, materialism covers everything, it doesn't. And I said, like in my class, when I say this, I say, you cannot be an atheist and a humanist at the same time. And they're saying you can only be a humanist if you're an atheist.
Wow.
And we're saying no. I think actually, when you look at it, the first humanist was Erasmus. He was a Christian priest.
Oh, yeah.
And he said because he's a humanist because he believed that human are at the center of God's creation.
Yes.
So
interesting.
I think we can be better humanists than the atheist who reduces man to less than what it is.
Yeah.
That's the first point, you know, really.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I have no depth of knowledge in the field of apologetics. So just put it out there for everyone who wants to write in and say anything. You can ask all your questions, Philippe. I'm just here to carry on the conversation.
You are.
But one thing I enjoy about learning this subject is equating Ecclesiastes in the Bible to many thoughts of atheism. So, okay, the first one you mentioned is like having this longing or this yearning. And Aretta already commented in with the verse I'm thinking of with the idea that's in there in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 11.
Mm-hmm.
It says, he has made everything beautiful in his time. Also, he has set the world in their heart so that no man can find out the work that God makes from the beginning to the end. Now, another translation of that and probably more accurate one is God has set eternity in our hearts.
Mm-hmm.
And that is like just a very clear indicator that we have a yearning beyond what we can touch, see, feel in touch with the same thing, hear, experience, like there's more to it than that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's another chapter in Ecclesiastes where it talks about just the really foundational, a child being born and the child being formed in the mother's womb.
Mm-hmm.
How do we not have answers to something like that? Because it's something that goes far beyond our knowledge and our capacity. None of us are creators the same way that God is a creator.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So when he creates life and he creates, he forms a baby in a mother's womb, we have nowhere else to look other than to say, well, that's beyond me.
Mm-hmm.
Like eternity is beyond me, but it's in my heart and I'm striving for it and yearning for it. Mm-hmm. What do I do about that?
Yes.
So I like to look at the Bible and see what it has to say, because Ecclesiastes is a book written for people who have basically given up on every other major aspect of life.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the main points you could say in Ecclesiastes is eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. There's no point.
Yeah.
But then there is a point, and it's to know God.
I think what I like about Ecclesiastes, one of the main expression of Ecclesiastes is under the sun.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh,
so, yeah. And I think it has this apologetic application in the sense that if you look at the world as a materialist, there's nothing under the sun. Mm-hmm. So in that way, if...
Nothing new.
If,
nothing new
yeah, the there's nothing yeah. new under the sun. Yeah. And in a way, that's just life is just the way it is.
Yeah.
So if Solomon, when he wrote it, stopped at that, he would have been the perfect materialist. Mm-hmm. But he believed in God, and therefore he's limiting his observation to under the sun.
Yeah.
So like, for example, there is no hope in this world. There's evil in the world. There's no hope in this world. Absolutely mm-hmm. under the sun. Mm-hmm. But if God exists, like I remember having one of arguments, you know, with a friend of mine who's not a Christian. He basically, well, there's so much evil in the world. We go down that route for a conversation and telling him, but you know, there's a hope that you don't have. It's what do you mean? Like, for example, what would be the ultimate face of evil in the 20th century? Of course, everybody knows it's Adolf Hitler. Mm-hmm. So are you frustrated that he got away with murder by killing himself and not going through justice? Absolutely. So, well, there's a difference between you and I. He mm-hmm. will go through judgment,
right?
According to my beliefs, right. Because there is nothing under the sun that is new, but there's more than just under the sun. Mm-hmm. So I think as Christians, we have a more adapted philosophy to the craving and yearnings of men. Like, we want justice and God will give it to us, mm-hmm. you know, and we see that in the book of Revelations where yeah. the martyrs are asking the questions, how long until
Lord?
We yeah. get our justice, mm-hmm. our revenge, how long, you know? Yeah. So, and then we can wait. If it's coming, we can wait, mm-hmm. you know? So, and then you can't as a human. So this yearning for sense of justice that you have cannot be fulfilled, which right. raises the question.
In this life. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Which raising the question, where does it come from? Again, you know, so that's interesting, you know, in a way. Like you mentioned Psalm 19 and Romans 1, you know, when you and I were talking earlier today.
Yeah.
You want to add something on those two chapters? Because
oh,
I think it's relevant.
Okay, sure. Let me let me turn there.
All right.
Psalm 19. Do I want to ask something?
No, you want to say something about it.
Well, I mean, just when we look at the world in front of us, okay, we use just our powers of observation.
Yes.
How does an atheist explain where all of these things came from?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's, you know, chaotic, I don't even know how to describe it. If it's chaotic and just all meshed together through a series of chance and
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and whatever, then how is it so perfect?
Yes.
How does it look so beautiful? How do we even see beauty in it?
Yes.
How do we comprehend in a way that goes beyond what we would look and naturally judge,
mm-hmm.
you know? Sorry, it's...
No, yeah, I know it's a little bit distracting, yeah. And you know, there's a birthday party just outside the studio, which we're missing the cake. I think it's
yeah.
chocolate cake, so we need to wrap it up,
man.
And we're going to finish in 5 minutes. No, we're not. No, don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
We're not going anywhere, but I actually, Sebastian's coming back in the studio. He just went out to make sure they kept three slices. One for Jesus, one for Moses, and one for Eli. And I know that was a tent. It was not a slice of cake. So, but the point we're making about Psalm 19 is we look outside the world and we know that there has to be more than just nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
There's a real specific order.
Yes.
As the, what does it say? As the, as a bridegroom coming out of his chamber mm-hmm. and rejoices as a strong man to run the race, so is the sun rising and setting each day.
Yeah.
Like how does this order exist? How does everything make total sense and in total harmony?
Yeah. Like if you guys want to know more, there is a great movie, not a movie, but like a documentary called The Privileged Planet.
Mm-hmm.
You can find it on YouTube. It's free, and I think it's an hour and 50 minutes or so. It shows how the world is fine-tuned. That's the word they're using. So fine-tuned that the odds of this being perfectly suitable for life is absolutely impossible without somebody fine-tuning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like we don't have that anymore because now we have digital radio in our cars. But when I was younger, you had to tune in, fine tune until you get too far and then come back. Okay. And then you hear, you know, so, and then if you move out of the range, you had to readjust a little bit, you know.
And then sometimes you also had to take the actual antenna and turn it one way or the other.
Yeah. So, and you couldn't just randomly and hoping just throw the knobs anywhere and just hoping that you would get the radio you want for. Mm-hmm. It has to be fine tuned. And there's many aspects of this universe that makes it impossible for life. Unless everything is in order. And some of the, just give some ideas, but some of the points they are making is that the size of the moon compared to the size of the Earth, the strength of the magnetic field, the distance to the sun, the distance of the moon to us, the rotation of, you know, the moon around, you know, the axis of the Earth, which is not perfectly, you know, it's tilted.
Tilted, yeah.
And the speed of the rotations, the composition of the atmosphere, the fact that there's water, all these things, you know,
yep.
And the strength of gravity, like if the gravity is too strong, anything bigger than the P would implode. There's many things that shows that it is, it's not just random. It's perfectly organized for life to be able to, and then they see, look at out there, there must be other life. We've been looking since the 1960s for mm-hmm. life on other planets, mm-hmm. which is like 60 years ago, you know, and we're still not having found any proof of any kind, even to the planets closer to us.
Yeah.
So we find Earth-like planets all the time, but there's nothing there. There's not even water, you know. Right. So the point is that it's another argument we could just come with. Okay, you saying evolution explains everything, but it doesn't. And even more so, it doesn't explain, of course, the organization of the, as we see here in Psalm 19, mm-hmm. and the sense of, we were saying earlier, the sense of justice or that we have eternity in our hearts in the Ecclesiastes. But yeah. When you think about this, if you read, and we might read a couple of quotes if we have time, but if you understand what evolution means, there are consequences to the evolutionary model mm-hmm. in philosophy. And one of them is that there is no free will. It does not exist mm-hmm. because we're wired a certain way as a species.
Right.
But if there is no free will, then why do we have a judicial system? Because I shouldn't be blamed for what I did. I'm wired to be this way. Yeah. So if somebody kills or rapes or you know, beats up a child, whatever, that's just the way it is. Like, look in nature. Look at the pride of lions, right? Mm-hmm. What with the guy in this younger lion who gets to he beats up the old lion. He goes to dying because he's not fit to survive. So what does the young lion does every single? The first thing he does, he kills all the pups.
Yeah.
Because they has to be his.
Right. Yeah.
Not acceptable, you know, in line, but that should be acceptable in our lives as well. You know, somebody gets, you know, a husband dies, woman gets married, he has three kids, we should kill the kids and have kids of our own.
Oh, man.
We don't accept that because we have a sense. Yeah. But if we were wired to survive,
yes,
then we shouldn't have any capacity to blame and have any moral judgments on anyone.
Yeah.
Because it must be so. We're going to read that in a moment, sure. But
yeah.
That's the point we're making here. There shouldn't be any judicial system, of course, because there shouldn't be any fruit. And also, there shouldn't be any psychiatry or psychological, you know, help for anyone. Mm-hmm. Because there wouldn't be any psyche.
No.
There wouldn't be.
There's no sense.
And Freud and Lacan, all these guys, we invented the field of mental illness, should be completely thrown down the drain. Because if evolution is true, then there shouldn't be any of those illnesses because there's nothing to be ill.
Right.
Oh, people can say there's a chemical imbalance. Well, yeah, but that doesn't happen through trauma. So there shouldn't be any trauma either because the trauma is a response for something because mm-hmm. we are bigger than just matter and energy. So when you look at things and then we're just scratching the surface of the arguments, when you look at all this, you realize it just doesn't make any sense. Yeah. So the Prague guy who told us at the beginning of the show, I'm smarter than you because I don't believe in some guy with a beard out there in the universe, slowly his argument is getting smaller and smaller, and maybe your foundation as an atheist is not as strong as you thought it was.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah. So here's the quote from Bertrand Russell that goes along very similar to what you were just saying.
Then we
saying.
Can comment it a little bit.
We can what?
We can make a comment on it.
That's right. That man is the product of causes which had no prevision of the end they were achieving, that his origin, his growth, his hopes and fears, his loves and his beliefs are but the outcome of accidental collocations of atoms, that no fire, no heroism, no intensity of thought and feeling can preserve an individual life beyond the grave, that all the labors of the ages, all the devotion, all the inspiration, all the noonday brightness of human genius are destined to extinction in the vast death of the solar system, and that the whole temple of man's achievement must inevitably be buried beneath the debris of a universe in ruins. All these things, if not quite beyond dispute, are yet so nearly certain that no philosophy which rejects them can hope to stand. Only within the scaffolding of these truths, only on the firm foundation of unyielding despair, can the soul's habitation henceforth be safely built.
I mean, if you don't know Bertrand Russell, and it's a long quote and maybe you haven't got it, and somehow maybe we can provide it in the comments at some point. But basically what Bertrand Russell, who is an atheist, says is that, and he says, like, what we have, What we are is a product of an accidental collocation of atoms. Mm-hmm. There's absolutely no purpose. Mm-hmm. If there is no purpose in life, then all these things, what we do, what we experience, like he says about labors and all devotion, the inspirations, the, you know, all these things, the human genius, none of this matters at all.
Yeah. And completely pointless.
Which is interesting because he was also a mathematician, you know. So basically he dedicated his whole life for nothingness. Because at the end, what we have is unyielding despair. That's the foundation on which we should stand, all of us. But there's many things to say about this quote. Number one is, I would say, is that he describes what life should be if God does not exist. But give me one person who believes that on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. I don't know anyone.
Right.
Absolutely no one.
Who's going to work every day? No. Who's raising their family? Who's walking the streets looking for something to do every day, believing that none of it matters and that it has absolutely no bearing on anything in the rest of the world?
Let's give a practical example. Like, you have two kids, right?
Sure.
And then you're an atheist all of a sudden. Your mm-hmm. proper response, if your kids go to school and gets beaten every day because he's bullied, you know, your son, mm-hmm. you know, your proper response should be, you know what? Maybe you're not fit to survival. Maybe you're not as strong as you thought. It's fine. You know, we're here for the benefit of the species, not just for us all. Mm-hmm. So I'm sorry for kid, but when you're not helping me, you shouldn't even ask the question. It's right. your problem. If you're fit to survive, you will. If you're not fit to survive, you won't.
Yeah, figure it out.
Yeah, kiddo. Figure it out. And if you can't figure it out, obviously you're not supposed to be surviving.
Man, that would be cruel.
It would be cruel, yes. But it wouldn't if it was
but
evolution.
But there'd be no cruelty if
there would
that
be
were
no
the
cruelty
case.
If there was no God.
Yeah.
So basically what he says, and at the end he says that we should be on the firm foundation of despair. But the very idea that our response should be despair shows that the argument he's making is false. Mm-hmm. Because if what you're saying were true, then mm-hmm. there wouldn't be any despair.
Right. It would just be the natural order.
It's a self-defeating argument. Yeah. Now, if you want to read the next one by Richard Dawkins, which is still alive, I think it's going to be interesting as well.
Yes. No, this is a very good one. This just I'll try to take my time. I'll try.
Yeah,
to,
yeah.
Okay. The total amount of suffering per year in the natural world is beyond all decent contemplation. During the minute that it takes me to compose this sentence, thousands of animals are being eaten alive. Many others are running for their lives, whimpering with fear. Others are slowly being devoured from within by rasping parasites. Thousands of all kinds are dying of starvation, thirst, and disease. It must be so. If there ever is a time of plenty, this very fact will automatically lead to an increase in the population until the natural state of starvation and misery is restored. In a universe of electrons and selfish genes, blind physical forces and genetic replication, some people are going to get hurt. Other people are going to get lucky. And you won't find any rhyme or reason in it, nor any justice. The universe that we observe has precisely the properties we should expect if there is, at bottom, no design, no purpose, no evil, no good, nothing but pitiless indifference.
Richard Dawkins is a British biologist. He's also a philosopher. I mean, he's an aspiring philosopher because I think he's great at what he writes when it comes down to his biology. He makes sense. I don't agree with him. But in his philosophy, he's lacking in many ways. And I think he's interesting here because So what he's trying to say is the concept of selfish gene is a concept that he came up with, mm-hmm. you know, beside him.
Gene, yeah.
Nobody has ever written about that before. But it's interesting because when he's trying to make a point here, if evolution is true, none of those death and evil, what we call evil, should matter.
Right.
But he carefully never says, he never quotes any human issues. Mm-hmm. He says the animal kingdom. And of course, after he says somebody would get lucky, somebody would get hurt. But he doesn't say it must be so. That's the sentence he uses with any other crime we are committing. Just like man cannot. If he wants to push the agenda here, guys, if evolution is true, then none of this makes any sense. Mm-hmm. It would never be, he could never have his book read and accepted if he would have applied this to human beings. Because it just doesn't work. Like, if I were to say this way, the amount of suffering per year, et cetera, the minute it takes for me to compute this sentence, thousands of people are being eaten alive. Many others are running for their lives, whimpering with fear. Others are slowly being devoured within rasping parasites. Or, you know, like the very concept of COVID-19, right?
Yeah.
If we were just a product of evolution, let the strong survive. Mm. Let the weak die. Let's just go. No 6 feet, you know, distancing, no mask, no vaccines. let nature run its course. Mm-hmm. People are saying there's too many people on the planet, 8 billion, that's too much. So let the weak die, yeah, and we'll be better off. But nobody believed this way. So he didn't write anything about human beings. He's just writing about animals here, which is interesting because at the end, we should have nothing but pitiless indifference. But nobody lived this way. And why is this relevant for the arguments we're making?
Right.
Because at the beginning, we heard this guy come to us and say, well, I don't believe in God because I'm smarter than you. And we're saying, well, if your philosophy without God, you take it to the extent of what it actually means. Mm-hmm. This is what it is. Yeah. And yielding despair, nothing but pitiless indifference. Mm. Are you okay with this? Well, no, I'm not. Why?
Right.
There is a...
going on inside?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So could we say that atheism can answer the big questions of the yearnings and existential questions of men? It can't.
Not at all.
Could God do it?
Absolutely.
The answer is yes.
Yeah.
So slowly, as we, you know, we could do, you know, we have about 10 minutes left because we stayed back a little bit on this one. There's about 7 or 8 points we could make on this, and maybe you can move on to the next one if you want to. But the point we're making here is atheism just doesn't work. Yeah. I think I said earlier about, you know, Luc Ferry is a French philosopher. He basically said, you know, like that atheism is a fair weather philosophy.
Right.
It only sounds nice. This sounds very nice on the intellectual level. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm afraid to think without God, but it doesn't apply. If Richard Dawkins loses one of his child or grandchildren, if he has so, I don't know. Would you think he would say it must be so? He won't. Hmm. He will be sad. He will, and then no amount of evolutionary theory could explain his feelings at all. It has to be because there is more meaning to life than just matter and energy. There's more meaning to life at all. Wow. So it just doesn't work.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't, yeah.
In Romans chapter 1, one of the most common chapters used to speak towards the idea of atheism, there's a few verses here that are kind of really important in how a Christian believes. Verse 17 down, really. Mm-hmm. For therein is the righteousness of God revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live by faith. Okay, there's one side right mm-hmm. there, the just shall live by faith. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has showed it to them. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. And I could stop there. We could read the whole thing, but I think that... five verses is loaded right there.
Yes.
Like, and one of the arguments I hear quite often is, like how baseless faith is. And I just kind of laugh when I hear that argument because it requires faith for an atheist to believe that there's nothing mm-hmm. whenever the evidence of all the world around them suggests otherwise. Mm-hmm. So how does faith play into this entire conversation?
When you talk to an atheist?
Yeah.
I think the first thing we could say is, like, you know, there's this book that was written years ago. It's called It Takes a Lot of Faith to Be an Atheist. Mm-hmm. I think the evidence that we look at out there, we look at what we have that we've been discussing all along, is people think that faith is the Christian stuff, the religious stuff.
Right.
But I think faith, the difference between the atheist and I is we put our faith in different things. Mm-hmm. I put my faith, the object of my faith is God. Your object of your faith is science or your own reasoning. Mm-hmm. And that's also is interesting because people think that our brain has not been designed to think, yet it's reliable enough for me to think that my arguments are valid. Mm. But if I don't believe in any God, right? Then in a way, I have faith in my capacity to reason. I think Chesterton said something like reason itself is a matter of faith.
Right.
In meaning is, I don't know. And you might say, well, I use my brain every day, but you don't have any objective outside ways of measuring mm-hmm. without using your own brain, mm-hmm. you know, to know if it's working or not. The point is, it's either created and it's reliable. It's not created, and it may or may not be reliable, which is interesting because people tell you sometimes, I had this conversation, why would you saying there's no God, and why would my brain trick me into thinking there is a God? Because mm-hmm. my brain, well, it's your chances of survival are better, you know. Then why would you fight against religion?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense.
Right.
You know, so you're here trying to convince me that my brain is tricking me, but evolution is equipping me with the trickery so I would survive better.
And if my brain is tricking me to believe that God is real, then how do you know your brain isn't tricking you to believe that God isn't real?
Yep.
And it's just whichever way helps you survive better. Mm-hmm. But how does not believing in God help you survive any better?
No, it doesn't. So therefore, fighting against whoever believes. And the argument is going to go, the Christopher Hitchens, you say, well, we have to because it affects the way we live in society. Who cares?
Yeah.
Because there's no purpose. Yeah. There's no order.
Yeah.
Society will come and go. Civilizations come and go. It's fine. It's just it would be just so we shouldn't care about anything, but we do.
Hmm.
So you want to read quote number 5? I think it's going to be fun.
I got you.
Okay.
C.S. Lewis.
Yeah, C.S. Lewis is a great author.
Supposing there was no intelligence behind the universe, no creative mind. In that case, nobody designed my brain for the purpose of thinking. It is merely that when the atoms inside my skull happen, for physical or chemical reasons, to arrange themselves in a certain way, this gives me, as a byproduct, the sensation I call thought. But if so, how can I trust my own thinking to be true? I love this example. It's like upsetting a milk jug and hoping that the way it splashes itself will give you a map of London. But if I can't trust my own thinking, of course I can't trust the arguments leading to atheism and therefore have no reason to be an atheist or anything else. Unless I believe in God, I cannot believe in thought, so I can never use thought to disbelieve in God.
I mean, so what does he mean? He means basically we have two options. One is God does not exist and our brains is not reliable. I cannot believe any thought I have unless I have faith in my own thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So we go back to your question earlier. Atheists have a lot more faith than we do because I believe in the reason why my brain is reliable.
Yeah.
They believe their brains are reliable, but it shouldn't. So who has more faith?
Right.
The one who believes that their brain is reliable without no reason for it.
Right.
So when people say, well, it's faith versus reason, no, it's faith that has a reason versus faith that doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's like when I teach at GGCA, which is, you know, the seniors in high school, I'm telling them, I'm asking them a question. Do you think we can live our faith intelligently? And it's always a trick question because I don't know, because they think, like most people, faith and reason are incompatible.
Yeah.
And I tell them absolutely, look, let me tell you why, for example, I do believe in miracles.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one reason why I believe in miracles, because I believe in God. It's a logical conclusion for me that miracles become possible if God exists.
Right.
Would I believe in miracles if God didn't exist? Or if God wasn't all powerful? I wouldn't.
Right.
So it makes complete logical sense for me to infer from God's existence the possibility of miracles. So I can live my faith intelligently. I don't have to, you know, like Mark Twain used to say, faith is believing in something you know is not true.
Hmm.
And I don't see that anywhere in the Bible as being defensible. Like Hebrews 11:1, faith is a demonstration, an assurance. The words are really strong there. So when I look at this, I'm thinking, okay, the only way for us to actually have a valid thought is for us to believe that our brain are capable of thinking in a reliable way. And that can happen unless it's been designed.
Right.
So, and, you know, like Chesterton says, you know, just one of the quotes we have in front of us, if evolution destroys anything, it does not destroy religion, but rationalism.
Hmm.
And basically saying the same thing. Then you just destroy the foundation of thinking if you think there is no God. Therefore, none of your arguments against God can be valid. You know, that's how people need to think. And I think it takes us to another point that maybe I can make quickly.
Sure.
Is when you look at, people use evolution as an excuse or a reason to conclude that therefore there is no God.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, when you look at the mechanism of evolution, and its complete success at every turn begs the question, how is something that is mindless capable of ultimate success every single time?
Right.
Now, there is, I don't know if you know, factorial odds in mathematics, but they are, the point being, if I take, like, I have a dice with 26 sides, one for each letter of the alphabet.
Mm-hmm.
If I throw it on the table here, how many chances do I have to get an A? One out of 26.
26 the first time.
The first time,
first
right?
First time, yeah.
And then I throw it the second time. How many chances do I have the second time?
Still one out of 26.
Yes.
But then it's, okay.
Right, it's compounded. Now, if I were to get an A the first time, I would be like A good chance, but it's possible. 1 in 26.
Yeah.
Now the second times I need a B, I throw it and I get a B the second times. I had 1 out of 26 chances to get a B the second time.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah.
But then compounded.
If you had to get it. Yeah.
If I had to get A and B, it's 26 times 26.
Right. Yeah.
And then from the way to A to Z, 26 times 26 times 26. And the numbers.
26 times. Yeah.
26 times 26. So it's 26 to the power of 26. That's huge.
It's gigantic.
And so in factorial odds, what we're saying is that the fact that evolution was capable to succeed at every term. Mm-hmm. And think about the eye, for example. We think, oh, well, it just appeared out of nowhere.
Yeah.
But no, it doesn't, because there is a few presuppositions that have to happen before. Mm-hmm. Number one is seeing is better than not seeing. Mm-hmm. So that's a judgment call.
Yeah.
There is something out there for me to see.
Yeah.
And there is a way to engineer a system that will allow me to connect my seeing to my brain for me able to assess what I see around me. All these preconceived plans in engineering require an intelligent thought. Mm-hmm. So every time you look at the success and the design of what is needed for us to evolve into what we are, it does not exclude the existence of God. I think if evolution is true, then theism is even more true.
Right.
That if evolution was not there.
Right.
Because it requires an intelligent person behind it. So every time we look at the propositional statement made by atheists, it always begs the question, how does it work without God? How does it work without God? So not only evolution is not an argument against God, it is an argument for the existence of God, because it couldn't work without an intelligent being behind it. Right?
True. True.
True.
Here. I mean, I'm just going to read some more verses.
Yeah, bring in the Bible.
That's the only thing I got. All right. Let's see. Verse 21. Because this all speaks to really where humanity stands. This is what we do to replace God. Verse 21. Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, mm-hmm. they became fools, and changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man, and to birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. Wherefore God also gave them up to the uncleanness through the lusts of their own hearts, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, mm-hmm. who changed the truth of God into a lie, mm-hmm. and worshiped and served the creature more than the creator, mm-hmm. who is blessed forever. Amen. If I were to put it succinctly, mm-hmm. Whether you're an atheist, whether you are a different religion, I actually don't know how I would put it succinctly. Let's just stick with atheism. If you're an atheist, chances are, and I'm not calling you out in like a negative way, chances are you worship yourself, mm-hmm. and you just don't realize it yet. You worship yourself. If you worship yourself, then there's just a whole lot wrong with that statement and you believing in the overall good of the world or the overall everything flowing together in existence together. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because if you worship yourself, you're always going to be about what is better for you, mm-hmm. and not for the whole and not for everything included.
Absolutely.
But if God is over everything, mm-hmm. and you worship God, then you're not worried so much about yourself. You're worried about everyone else and everything else. Mm-hmm. And that's where all these feelings come from. That's where love comes from. That's where desire comes from. That's where faith emanating towards, mm-hmm. anything or in an object comes from. It all comes from a creator who allows us to think beyond ourselves. Mm-hmm. But if we don't think beyond ourselves, if we only worship ourselves or the moving thing on the ground or the wooden statue or whatever the case may be, it's just a very small, insignificant, like it's as big as however big our brains are. Mm-hmm. You know, it's small.
That's the whole point, I think, of chapter 1 Romans, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and then Paul says that they are without excuse, because first God give all of us a chance to look at the universe and ask the right questions. We don't know everything. That's what we call the general revelation.
Yeah.
I cannot get saved by meditating on a tree. But I can ask the questions, what the heck is this and why is it here?
Yeah.
And so the point being is here. And then if I reject that, verse 18, I know the truth, I suppress it, mm-hmm. then I become a self-worshipper.
Yeah.
And self-worshipping is connected to what we said earlier, because I think that my brain is the ultimate authority to know everything. Mm-hmm. And when I reject God, I believe that I am the ultimate authority to decide what is true or not. And that's exactly what it is. It's self-worshipping. So it's exactly what the Bible says.
Yeah.
This comment on us living without God is absolutely true today. Absolutely.
Yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Wow, we're beyond the time, and the Sebastian shut it off. Shut it.
He said, "Quit talking already."
Quit talking, guys. Okay.
Thank you, Philippe, for your contribution and for leading us. Thank you for joining us today. If you're following along, Elizabeth, Aretta, anyone else who commented in, we appreciate it. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Be sure to join us next week for a brand new topic. You guys have a great weekend.
We will.
See ya. Thank you.